As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We are sat inside the Etihad Stadium, where at least Laurie Whitwell and I are. We've got just the 11 screens showing replays of City's six goals in the Manchester derby, which only makes it feel like a better afternoon all round. Andy Mitten's joining us as well from over in Chicago. He's been watching the match with the Chicago Reds, which I'm sure was a lovely afternoon as well. Laurie, we need to just dive straight into it, really. This podcast is going to be all about Manchester City 6, United 3. What went wrong?
I think everything really went wrong that could go wrong, certainly in the first half. I mean, 4-0 down again. And I've got a little stat for you on this one. So Brentford, 4-0 down at half-time. That was the first time since Liverpool, 4-0 down at half-time last October. Those three matches are the only times in Premier League history that Man United have been 4-0 down at home in the Premier League. And they're only the seventh team in the Premier League history to be 4-0 down at half-time in twice in the same season. You know, West Brom and Newcastle in like relegation seasons, that's who they share company with. So
thanks, Laurie. I'm feeling better now, mate.
It's pretty damning. He picked the same team as he did against Arsenal. Clearly he wants to establish relationships with players on the pitch and felt that that was a good performance that could match up against Man City. Arsenal press high, you know, Arteta's got them playing a similar way to Guardiola, but City are another level, aren't they? Their wingers stayed wide, Grealish and Foden, space in the midfield, the amount of times that City had gaps to exploit, I think was quite staggering, really. Ten Hag afterwards said it was about belief. I think that is partially true, but I also think the setup just wasn't right and the personnel wasn't right against a team like Man City.
Yeah, okay, let's attack the setup in a moment, but first of all, there was different words used, Andy, to describe essentially the same thing. There was a lack of belief, apparently, according to Erik ten Hag, a lack of intensity, according to Bruno Fernandes, who I spoke to, a lack of fight, I also heard mentioned as well. All in essence the same thing. But when you're heading into a Manchester derby, Andy, isn't that the absolute basic requirement for the team?
Yes, it is. And we could use a lot more words and add descriptions of our own. And I got a mate ringing me 10 minutes from the end in the Manchester United end saying, everyone's leaving. And he'd not seen it like this. And he's like, City fans are singing this, they're singing that. And the words he used were probably a little too colourful for this podcast. You do expect it as a minimum.
Can I ask a quick question on that, Andy?
Yeah.
Do you think that's a bad thing that fans left? Because I saw in the Q&A that we did, some people were saying, why would you ever leave? Whatever the scoreline. I mean, some people were leaving at half-time, but by the 75th...
Before half-time.
Yeah.
40 minutes, 4-0
down.
40
minutes, 4-0 down. But by that time, there was loads of blue seats. What do you think?
I personally wouldn't leave before the end. At Anfield in April, I stayed to the end. I felt like if you enjoy the highs, you've got to suffer the lows. And I wouldn't leave it. I just wouldn't. If you've paid for the ticket, you've got a right to do whatever you want to do. I think Sky TV showed fans leaving early. My mates who went down at half-time expected the concourse to be full of the fans they'd seen leaving, and the concourse wasn't anything like as busy as they thought. So clearly a substantial number did leave because they'd had enough. I mean, it's just a human reaction. I'm sure there'll be people who left the ground early saying they didn't deserve for us to stay there. They didn't deserve our support. I personally wouldn't have left. I've been to many, many derby matches. I've seen Manchester United get hammered in those derby matches, and I've not left.
Fair enough. Let's move it on then. Erik ten Hag didn't seem to think there was any point in the press conference talking about the setup. You asked him directly about it because he went back to the point that we've just talked about. It was more about a lack of belief, a lack of intensity. But the setup didn't seem right, did it? It looked, even before United went behind, like they were struggling with the current setup, and that current setup didn't seem to change throughout the 90 minutes even.
No, I mean, a lot of people coming into this game were thinking Casemiro at least starting, maybe even in a midfield three, you know, to kind of bring that protection, I suppose. Clearly, Ten Hag still wants to be able to impose United on the game rather than be a reactive side. But then United's wins here have been, you know, kind of defending deep, compact.
If there's anywhere to be passive, it's probably here, isn't it?
And hitting on the break. That was the thing that disappointed me the most, because you know against this Man City team, you will get chances. United scored three goals here. I saw Andy's tweet at full time, you know, the first time they scored three goals away for, I don't know, quite a long time. And there were opportunities in that first half where more technical quality would have actually produced a chance. I mean, even that the first goal that City had, they'd given it to Sancho in midfield, and Sancho takes the wrong decision.
Ten Hag pointing that out in his interview as well.
There's a specific example of where actually that game could have turned a different way, potentially, because you look at the way that Crystal Palace went 2-0 up here, Newcastle went 3-1 up, I think, against City, Aston Villa stayed in the game and got an equaliser at Villa Park. So City do give chances, and that's what's frustrating. I mean, Guardiola said it after the game as well. He said that City played very well, and the first half wasn't United's fault as such. He just thought that City were that much better, but I still think there were opportunities there for United, and I wonder if either personnel or I guess the whole structure of the team might have executed that a bit better.
You do get chances against City, as Laurie's saying. I've been speaking to people during the game. If you're going to be transistor against Manchester City, you've got to do it quickly. Manchester United are failing to do that quickly. So you had a situation where your defence isn't interlocking with the midfield or the forwards. It looked like a disjointed team. My main takeaway was, if you're going to start five attackers away at Manchester City, who are probably the best team in the world at the moment, then that is extremely bold to do, and brave. Or you might say it's foolish as well, because if I use the word brave there, you might also say that United were not brave when they were in possession. They weren't as clinical as they could have been, but Manchester United have scored three goals there. Okay, the last couple, City's players had their phones out. They'd done the job. It's all right saying that there was a good 10 minutes. The job had been done. And there are similarities there with that last derby as well. The consolation is so scant. Manchester United conceded six in a derby match. The team are conceding far too many goals. And there's a bit of a rude awakening for players who've had good starts to their United career. Malacia went off at half-time. He had a horrendous first half. He just did. Varane, when he got injured, I felt that the floodgates opened a little bit for Manchester City. Because if you looked at the start of the game, he was watching Haaland very closely. And if you're going to put a player on Haaland, then Varane might as well be the one. But when he went off, that adversely affected. That said, United substitutes, I thought Luke Shaw did well. I thought that he played well for England midweek. I thought Tony Martial scored twice. Brave header. Fred had the shot which led to that. So we're picking up the smallest of crumbs here. And I didn't expect United to win. So as I'm sort of coming down from the post-game, you know, mixing the emotion and being rational about it, and seeing that there's a big gap in the league table now, I didn't expect United to win that derby match today. So if United can bounce back from this and can continue to pick up those wins, there were four good wins before that derby defeat. This can be seen as a blip. I hope that Ten Hag learns from it, and I hope that some of the players learn from it as well, because it can't go on. You can't be conceding six against Manchester City.
No, and actually, speaking to Bruno Fernandes after the game, like I've already mentioned, it felt a little different to some of the chats that I've had to have with United players post some of the landmark defeats that they've had over the course of the last year. They did feel like there was maybe slightly more of an explanation this time, that it wasn't just, you know, the continue of a malaise. It was a day where things were clearly wrong that they feel that they could look and address. At times last season, when you spoke to the players, they were struggling to know even what to say. I got to the point where I was even struggling to know what to ask, to be honest, because it felt like you'd done the same interview, you know, time and time again. Andy mentioned the changes there, Laurie. One thing that stuck out to me, do you think Ten Hag could have been more decisive with some of the changes? Do you think some of the changes could have come earlier? I was surprised that it was only Luke Shaw, for instance, coming on at half-time, and to me, it seemed very clear after 5-10 minutes of that first half that there was a gaping hole in the middle of midfield, because Scott McTominay was on Bernardo Silva wide on the right, and Bernardo Silva seemed to be purposely pushing him wide. Christian Eriksen was on Kevin De Bruyne, which still feels weird to say. And he was pulling him left all the time, and there was just a big gap in the middle of the midfield. And I don't know, I could see that, and I'm not even going to profess to be anything like the minds that are on the Manchester United bench. Are you surprised that there wasn't more of a change sooner, really?
Yeah, I mean, 4-0 down, you sort of think, I mean, he did three, didn't he, at Brentford at 4-0 down. I suppose he'd already used
I was expecting at least
Lindelof.
That today,
yeah. I mean, the Casemiro one is interesting. He was asked about that afterwards, and basically he said, well, when Casemiro signed, we were winning, and, you know, it's more a reflection of a positivity on Scott McTominay than it is a rejection of Casemiro. But it feels odd, that situation, to me. So it's certainly one to kind of watch.
I
mean, Ten Hag said,
I asked you a couple of weeks ago, did you think it was about the fact that Casemiro is the only one that didn't feel like a true
I do think that's got a point to play, certainly. I mean, Ten Hag said he'll certainly, you know, come into the team in the short term, no question, but it feels a kind of a jigsaw piece that he's having in his own mind to fit into the puzzle, rather than one that, you know, it's a natural fit for him. I mean, that being said, you know, Anthony scored, you know, brilliant goal 4-1. It felt like a consolation, obviously. But then straight away, City put the foot on the accelerator and they swarmed all over Christian Eriksen. And Gundogan, who's obviously that kind of free player, you know, it certainly went a better game for him than it did against Chelsea in the Champions League final, which I think was the only previous time that he's played that kind of holding role. And he was all over Eriksen, and then they broke and it was 5-1. And, you know, as soon as any kind of glimmer of a hope, I mean, it wasn't really a glimmer, but immediately snuffed out. And I think that actually, reflecting on what Andy was saying about, you know, the kind of spirit, I suppose, in the final 10 minutes and the fact that it was 6-3 in the end, it's almost more annoying, because you had, you know, like a United fan in front of us around the press box. It was in the City section, sort of celebrating at 6-2, like a kind of mock celebration. And City fans, they weren't angry, obviously. They were just sort of like laughing and chuckling along at the joke. It was kind of pitying, which is kind of an indictment of where United are at, that City can win so comfortably that even when United score, that they're kind of shrugging it off as, yeah, no great shakes. It's kind of funny.
Better than 6-1, though, wasn't it? 6-3 sat here now, if we'd been chatting at 6-1, especially considering that the place that scoreline has in sort of Manchester folklore.
Well, they were singing for 10, weren't they, at 6? I mean, they've had this, the chant that they've got, you know, should have been 10 when it was at Old Trafford in that season when they won the title on goal difference. But, yeah, I mean, at least on, you know, naked stats, it means that United's goal difference is, what, is it -3 rather than -5? I mean, crazy that we're 7 games into the season, that's the statistic.
Andy, how much do you think Erik ten Hag will have learnt today as well? I've sort of asked Laurie a question there about whether he could have been more decisive in his changes in game. The team was unchanged from the Arsenal match. 10 of the 11 also started against Liverpool, Southampton and Leicester. Clearly he felt that this was the team and the formula that he wanted to come into the derby with. But when you've got a manager on the other side like Pep Guardiola, who's had pretty much a month to have a look at the way United play and have played, and it felt like he'd just worked it out in that first half, didn't it?
I think that's a fair comment. And I think Laurie mentioning Eriksen is really interesting. Manchester City identified Eriksen as the main threat and nullified him. Manchester City were fine to let Scott McTominay cross into their half. They took Manchester United's best player from the last month, Eriksen, the player of the month. Not that United played a lot of matches last month.
Yes.
So that's the second point. United looked cold going into the game. Guardiola looked like he'd worked it out. And tactically, Guardiola got it right. And I think his point that United didn't actually do that much wrong, I can see where he's coming from there, even though I don't agree with him. When I looked at Malacia and some of the players who made individual errors, Jadon Sancho, Dalot getting booked really early on, didn't help either. I think they can all learn, in the same way that, you know, Patrice Evra learned after his first awful Manchester derby just after he signed. I don't think if Malacia is going to have a great career at Manchester United, he's going to play that badly again in a Manchester derby. That was a real welcome to English football there. But as we've also been saying, City do throw up chances. City are not indomitable. City have dropped points in a couple of the games so far this season. Yes, they look fantastic when they play well.
They had a pretty makeshift defence as well, Andy. That's another thing. When we saw the team sheet pitch side, you're sort of looking at City's team, I mean, Akanji's not been here long, but that's the first time that Akanji and Aki have partnered each other in the Premier League. Kyle Walker was taken off in the first half injured as well. Emerick Laporte was only fit enough for the bench. It seemed like a huge call for Ruben Diaz to be left on the bench with Aki playing instead of him. And actually as well, the biggest thing probably was the fact that Rodri was injured and not in the squad. He's started every single match for City this season, arguably for Haaland's form and De Bruyne's form. He's still the most important player for Pep's side.
I was getting messages from some of the Blue Half of the family before the match, and they're echoing what you said. They were sending pictures of my nephews wearing Manchester City shirts, which is obviously like a dagger to the heart all of the time. And one of them, Chris Bezic, said, "I'm not sure on our team selection. I'm very nervous and I couldn't predict the result." I've not replied to that because I think he was trying to soften me up there. And I've still
hook you in to say something stupid that he could send you back at 90 minutes.
That's what he does. And the other thing is, his season tickets is pretty close to the press box. So I've had a few times when I've been in there and he comes past me at, like, you know, when the 4-1 up and starts like laughing at me. And I'm like, you're doing my head in here. And this is also my job, believe it or not. I've got to meet a deadline. Yeah. I'm at work, you knob, go away. But obviously you can't say that because then it'd be like a... So I've ended up like going to my sister a few times going, this is my job. And they're like, you've just seen your ass because United have been absolutely battered.
There is that,
And she's right as well. But yeah, I can show you pictures of my little blue nephew with his Cancelo top on before the match. Look at me. I'm going to get him professional help. And I'm not responding to his messages. I'm going to give it a good 72 hours. And then I'm going to message him something nothing to do about football.
Just say to him, Andy, at least you'll never have to worry about getting a ticket to the Etihad, because you know they were still on sale, at least yesterday. I didn't check today, but you know there were certainly some available if they wanted it.
These are hard facts, Laurie, and as a journalist, it's important to... You know, there was a couple of Blues where I was watching the game today, and I had a nice chat with him about Manchester City's European Cup wins.
Didn't last very long.
Just a silence, but it was the only time I kept him shut all match. But we've got
small crumbs,
the smallest of crumbs. And when I watch Haaland, he barely touches the ball, but when he does, he scores. It's really worrying watching him.
Guardiola said an interesting thing after the game, actually. He said that Haaland said to him, or I think he said it publicly, he doesn't mind if he only touches the ball five times and you know, if he scores five goals. Yeah. Guardiola's saying, no, I want you to actually be comfortable on the ball and getting familiar with it. That's what the whole game's about.
Well, he did have two assists as well.
Well, that's it. I mean, three goals, two assists. I wonder if only like somebody had recommended him when he was at Mulder and United had kind of seized the initiative on it.
Do you know something else though as well? I remember covering his unveiling at Manchester City and he actually was asked directly, what's the game that you're most looking forward to? And his exact words were something along the lines, I've just said exact words and then said something along the lines, but you get what I'm getting at.
It's been a long day.
Yes, it has, hasn't it? Amen to that. He said, I don't want to say the words, but Manchester United.
Well, it was interesting that Roy Keane and Alfie Haaland were both here and they were kind of close at one stage with broadcasters. I think it probably is the first time maybe since that tackle. And you do wonder, maybe United were always fighting a losing battle with it because it was such a crucial element of Alfie Haaland's career. So perhaps that was always going to go that way and City were the one that he really wanted him to sign for. But I do think that, you know, ultimately football trumps any kind of, you know, what's best for your football career trumps any kind of historical kind of beef. So, you know, I don't know. I wonder if United could have actually done something back then when they were told originally about him, because we had a piece by Danny Taylor on The Athletic talking, you know, with the scout at Mulder saying that he recommended him to United as well as obviously Ole Gunnar Solskjaer did. Where did it go? What happened there?
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right, okay, let's talk about what's next then for Manchester United a little bit. Maybe reflect on some of the changes that we could see in the team, because like we said before, it's been a very settled lineup for Erik ten Hag over the course of these last five Premier League matches. Of course, there's been changes in the Europa League. It is the Europa League next against Ammonia Nicosia on Thursday. Karl Anka, I think, decided second half he was going to go and pack his suitcase rather than watch the rest of that game. If he had any sense, I'm sure he would have gone and done that anyway. So Karl will be with us on Thursday. We'll record the podcast after that match in Cyprus. But in terms of the lineup, the one thing that happened today was Luke Shaw coming in at half-time for Tyrell Malacia, which feels like that might be a more longer-term change in the United team, Laurie. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I will come on to that in more depth, but I just think it's a bit harsh that you've mentioned suitcase when Andy Mitten is in Chicago still waiting for his suitcase to turn up. I mean, you can't see him, listeners, but we're looking at him. He's wearing some horrendous shirt that I can only imagine that he's borrowed off somebody because he's got no other clothes.
A fella come up to me before, he said, I mistook you for Laurie Whitwell because you dress similar to him. I said, well, there's a bit of a story here, mate. Well, yeah, I mean, I got to Chicago on Wednesday night, and it's now Sunday morning, and the baggage still hasn't arrived. So nice one, Tap Air Portugal. I really love it how you, like, you don't get in touch with people to let them know what's going on.
Is there any airline that Andy Mitten hasn't got beef with now?
Well, he uses that many of them.
That's true.
Come on, get back to
back,
it, Luke
back
Shaw.
To the point. After the England performance, people thought, OK, he's pushing. Defensively, I still think he's got the edge on Malacia. I know Luke Shaw's had culpable moments, you know, far post issues. Certainly last season on counter-attacks, he was perhaps at fault. But overall, I still think Premier League-wise, he's got the edge there. And at least that's sort of two good options for Ten Hag, really. I mean, Malacia has done well. He's a bit of a pit bull, isn't he? He didn't have a good game today, though. I mean,
no.
he got done by Phil Foden. But both
he
the fullbacks,
alone, though,
as Andy,
was he?
Yeah, as Andy's touched on. I mean, that was such a difficult situation. 25 minutes in, and both your fullbacks have been booked against a team like City that love to attack wide. It was United were fighting a losing battle there. So I think you got to say Luke Shaw coming in is going to be one of the changes over in Cyprus.
Well, even sort of the next Premier League game though, it feels like Luke Shaw. Yeah. May well be first choice moving forward, or am I jumping the gun with
no,
that?
No, I don't think you're right. I think it's a debatable one. I don't think it's, there we go, decision made.
I think, suppose he brought Martinez has straight back in after Brentford and he got took off at half-time that day, didn't he?
Yeah, I think Ten Hag's got fidelity to the players that he has brought
good
in.
Good word.
I just thought I'd throw it out there. And so I do wonder if he will, I don't know, give Malacia another go, you know, not thinking that the City game is kind of like something to hang your flag on. But no, I think it is that's one that you can look at. The only thing is, you look at the right-back situation and Aaron Wan-Bissaka, it wasn't on the bench today.
Just checking it again, he wasn't.
Yeah,
no.
So, I mean, that's a what's going on there, I'd love to know exactly. But it looks like Diogo Dalot, you know, he's played well, but again, you would really ideally like to have genuine competition in each place, and I guess we'll see if that happens, you know, as the months go on.
It took a long time for Casemiro to come on the pitch today, even Andy, despite the fact that it seemed like it was crying out for him. Like we said before, Erik ten Hag was asked in the press conference why he's not playing more. Is it time now for Casemiro? Because I don't know, I'm jumping the gun a bit with Luke Shaw. It doesn't feel like I can with Casemiro. It still feels like, at Goodison Park, it feels like he'll still be on the bench.
Honestly, Ian, I think they're all going to get chances. That was the first of nine games, and you've got Europa League matches. I think if you're Harry Maguire, you're going to get
but
minutes
there's a
this month.
There's a difference, though, isn't there, Andy, between getting chances in Nicosia on Thursday and getting chances at Goodison Park at the weekend, surely?
But I think Luke Shaw is a type of player who, if he gets a chance, and this has happened several times in his United career, he becomes so motivated. Remember when Alex Tilley's first game? We saw some brilliant Luke Shaw performances. I think he's seen now that he's actually lost his place. I think we saw against Germany for England, he played really well. I think he will be so motivated now to come in when he gets a chance. And that's a good thing. And if you've got competition for any position. With Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I think the issue is less clear-cut there. I think Shaw is primed to compete. I don't think Aaron Wan-Bissaka is with Diogo Dalot. Other players will get the chances. I think that Casemiro could have been used as a double screen today with Scott McTominay. I think that might have been more sensible with the benefit of hindsight, but football managers don't have the benefit of hindsight. They have to choose their team before the matches. Look, you cannot buy a player for as much as Manchester United have played for Casemiro and not play him. It's Scott McTominay's played really well, so I get the point that why he's kept his place in the team. But Casemiro is one of the best midfielders in the world. The idea of him sitting on the bench is absolutely obscure to me. Far more obscure than Donny van de Beek, who came in and we rightly asked those questions. Right from the off there, I never got the feeling that he was going to be a starting player. The truth will come out with Casemiro, and I don't know the answer to this, because you both touched on a slight, is this really Ten Hag's man? Because he wanted Frenkie de Jong so much. And
Should have talked about that at some point.
Yeah, we didn't mention it in the summer. And when that didn't happen, he's gone for Casemiro, and he's got to play. And I don't know in what shape he's going to start becoming a Manchester United regular. I can't even say with any certainty that he is going to. But it would seem absolutely bizarre that one of the best midfielders in the world, a proven player with the medals to his name, doesn't come in and link up with Varane. I hope Varane's all right, by the way, because today wasn't good for him. Very interesting in the first few minutes before United had gone behind. He followed Haaland right back into City's half, and I thought, that looks like a specific instruction to me. And then it all unfolded. But I would be stunned if Casemiro did not become a regular for Manchester United. If not, why not? Why buy him? I mean, it would just be bizarre not even to give him a chance. And we could talk about each of the players individually. Anthony scored that great goal today. Not really done that much so far, but then again, he's scored again. A lot is going to be learned in October, I feel. There are so many games and big matches as well. You know, Everton are in a pretty decent place. You've got the travels with the European matches. You've got a game away at Chelsea. There's so many big matches. And then you've got the 5 home games in 18 days. It is non-stop. It's going to be really interesting.
Do you know who we haven't even mentioned yet?
Who?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, he didn't play out of respect for his career. I don't know. I listened in the press conference to what Erik ten Hag said, and I'm not sure if he said it in interviews as well. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, what do you think? Because, so he's saying out of respect, he didn't want to bring him on, but I was watching him warm up, and he was going full pelt down the line doing sprints.
I was sat 2 seats behind him, or 2 rows behind him. And believe you me, he wasn't getting much respect in that seat either, because there was plenty of City fans throughout the entire game shouting all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Every time a goal went in, he went, have that, Cristiano, should have signed for a big club, etc., etc., etc. And he got pelters when he went to warm up as well. So
I mean, is it respect to leave him on the bench? I mean, because presumably he might start in Cyprus. Is that respect to play him in the Europa League? I mean, listen, I'm not having a go at Ten Hag.
I'm certain that he'll play in Cyprus if he thinks that Martial needs minutes, like he also said. He might start him. So I don't even know if it's certain that Ronaldo starts.
I suppose his point is that when you're 4-0 down, you're kind of putting on players that you're kind of hoping for something to happen, or you're kind of, I don't know, throwing a bit of caution to the wind maybe. But I still don't really think that means that you exclude Cristiano Ronaldo from, you know, your thoughts. Maybe more so, he felt that he couldn't have Ronaldo, who doesn't necessarily do that work off the ball consistently. You know, he did it in parts against Arsenal, for example, to good effect. But maybe he felt that he needed to put Anthony Martial on, and that was the best answer he could. He knew he was going to get a Ronaldo question, and that was the kind of best thing he could sort of say, that it was out of respect.
I think, well, I wonder whether one of Laurie's mates has offered him a tenner to get the word fidelity into this podcast. That's a start. I wasn't surprised that he didn't start. I was slightly surprised that he didn't come on. But then all the substitutions were made. The TV cameras cut to his face after that final substitution. But then Anthony Martial scored twice. I don't think Cristiano Ronaldo, one of the greatest players ever, probably the greatest player I've ever seen play for Manchester United, is the club's future. It's Erik ten Hag who's making the decisions. He's the United manager. We've all got a view on this, and we're absolutely entitled to that. I think we'll have plenty of Ronaldo moments this season, but I don't think he's a first choice starter anymore for Manchester United.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Right, Laurie, you've got to go away and write something very shortly. What are you going to write about?
I'm going to write about... This is probably a bit cliche, but the gaps in United's away section towards the end of the game and how perhaps they mirrored the gaps on the pitch during the game. But I will, of course, be writing with the benefit of hindsight, because before the game, we were asked for our lineups and I picked the lineup that Erik ten Hag went with. I thought, you know, keeping the same lineup as had victories previously was the right thing to do for cohesion, etc. Not really giving full due respect, so there's that word again, to City's, you know, incredible offensive talents, kind of thinking that actually, yeah, United can get at them because, you know, Palace have got at them and Newcastle have got at them. Why can't United? But clearly City, I don't know, I think Guardiola has them in a certain mode for this game. So that was what I said. I thought if United could keep it tight, when I was on Sky Sports, a little clang there before the game, I was on their match day show and was asked for my prediction, and I thought maybe I did think City would win, but I thought that would become it'd be in those crucial moments rather than overwhelmingly so.
So the only thing worse than your predictions is your tan job that I believe you had in anticipation of your appearance on national television.
Listen, prepare
You've
to
never
fail.
Had a fake tan, by the way, for the podcast. Whoa, on YouTube. Do you remember we went to the pub, Andy? I didn't see any fake tan that day,
No.
I checked his hands as well.
Are we saying that Laurie's had a fake tan to go on the telly? Is that right?
No, fake tan, wasn't it?
No, can I clarify? A sunbed session.
Oh, is that better?
I think that's perhaps more appropriate. But I
suppose you don't need a mitten for the sunbed, do you?
Listen, I'm...
Just for a podcast.
Well, exactly.
Where did you have your sunbed, Laurie?
There's a place in Wilmslow called Indigo Sun.
Maybe they'll give us free sunbeds after this.
Than you did 5 minutes ago.
The only thing was, right, so listen, I am pasty complexion. I am white as they come. And I just thought, you know, if I'm going to go on TV, you know, I'd like to look I'd have a little bit of colour in my face. But the problem was that I wore some sunglasses, goggles, and at an engagement party
yesterday.
Ian sat next to me. Now he can see it. Now I've pointed them out. People yesterday were saying to me, you're going to look awful. We can see these tan lines around your eyes. I think I got away with it. Check out the picture that I posted and see if you can spot.
I'm sure you got away with it. Andy, what was it like watching the match in Chicago, mate?
Well, the pub opened at 8 a.m, so at 7:30 on a Sunday morning, you had the Chicago Reds queuing to get in.
Wow.
Alcohol is not allowed to be sold in this state until 10 a.m.
What score was it when alcohol was allowed to be sold?
The game had finished, but... Exactly. At half-time, they asked me to say a few words to them, which before the game, I thought, yeah, that's absolutely fine.
Well, just to really cheer them up?
Well, I couldn't get out of it, could I? This was agreed to happen at half-time. So I get a microphone, and basically United are 4-0 down, and I've got this slot what I've got to fill. I'm thinking, what on earth am I going to say to lift the mood of people? And I just said, you know, I wish the bar was open so I could order, you know, a beer. Something nice and simple. There's a couple of hundred United fans here. There were two or three Manchester City fans here. The enthusiasm of the Chicago Reds was fantastic. The diversity is incredible. You've got local people. You've got people who've moved here from the UK, from Ireland, from India, from other parts of the United States. They've got a huge flag. Some of them travel over to England. I felt really welcomed. They were having big cooked breakfasts in the morning. The game started with a surge, people singing UNITED, and then it all fell to shit. That is the truth of my experience here. I did go out last night and I met someone who Laurie would buzz off, who was started telling me about. He said, do you want a vintage cocktail? I went, go on then.
Oh,
what's in it? And he started saying, well, this bottle's from 1967 and I got this and this was procured from whatever. And it just like talking in Basque to me. I was just nodding along, agreeing with him. But Laurie would have got it all. and there's all these different mixtures, and he's saying like you can feel like the space side of it, and I'm like, how can you smell a river in Scotland in a bottle in Chicago? What on earth are you on about? And I just nodded and said it's very nice.
Isn't that the kind of thinking that someone like Paul Oakenfold would produce, Andy? Because you've held back the name, but you know, I'll put it out there for you.
Paul Oakenfold was Friday night, so New Order, big Manchester band, and Pet Shop Boys, one half of whom's from Lancashire.
That was so Friday night, Laurie.
Have you had two nights out in a row, Andy? You can't sustain two nights out in a row.
Mate, I am on it. I've been on it every
He's
single
gonna have a
night.
Third one now.
Wearing the same clothes, and Paul Oakenfold, who's a DJ, he's a big Chelsea fan. Spent time with him before he went on stage on Friday night. And he said, do you want to come to my after show? And I thought, how can I refuse this even though I'm tired? So I went to his party and I pretended that I knew the music that he was playing and got right on it.
Well, that's it. Does Paul Oakenfold play the music at his own party or does he let someone else have a go on the decks?
So he played like a really cool club in Chicago, and Paul Oakenfold is such an established name that he had his super fans coming up in front of the DJ booth where he was and taking pictures. He was a really nice guy.
Were you one of them?
I was one of them taking pictures. Well, I just spoke to him about football, and he's a Chelsea fan. He lives in Hollywood. He's worked with people like Madonna and Michael Jackson. I found him really, really friendly, really interesting. He played loads of Manchester music, which was good. Between New Order and the Pet Shop Boys, he was playing the Happy Mondays. He was playing the Stone Roses. Yeah, it's good. I think it's nice for any human to go outside of their comfort zone and see how other people work. And for me to stand there watching him DJing, you know, they don't like pull a bag of records out like I imagined. They've got like, it's like being a pilot. You've got like loads of buttons and they go like that. And then it goes, doof, 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 doof. So yeah, interesting weekend.
A happy Monday would be nice, wouldn't it?
Oh, there you go. Right, okay, we're being given the wave by the media steward here at Manchester City who needs to go and have his celebratory chippy this evening. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you for your patience putting up with us. And a beer as well, yeah. I think we might need a couple of them, to be fair. But just before we go, I wanted to say thank you on behalf of all of us as well to the brilliant feedback that we had to the Athletic article that dropped on Friday about the podcast. We're always very appreciative when anyone says nice things about what we're doing, but genuinely, it's really lovely of you to say such nice things. So thank you very much, and we will continue on despite 6-3 defeats in the Manchester Derby, eh?
At least we've got 9 goals.
Yeah, something like that. Don't forget, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. There'll be another show after the Ammonia game on Thursday. Carl Anker will be back on that. Andy, safe travels back home from Chicago. I also hope that your suitcase arrives back at some point. Andy's giving me a finger now. Go on.
I've got a Chicago Red with me, and I'm going to ask him about the podcast. You've got 10 seconds in your strongest Chicago accent. Why do you listen to this podcast?
Chicago accents,
I'd laugh if he says I don't listen to it. Go on.
I would say it's for the Bears, but for my Chicago natives, I'll say it's for the Reds.
So you listen to it for the Reds, or do you not listen to this podcast?
Not yet.
No. Love it.
He'll be listening to this episode to hear him say the Reds twice at the end. That was brilliant, Andy. Thank you very much. Really worth it. A great end to a great podcast.
Quite a fitting end.
Quite a fitting end to this day, yeah. But Andy, thank you very much for being with us over in America. Laurie, thank you for keeping me company here before we get chucked out. And guys, of course, thank you for listening as well, especially after that. We'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Cheers, boys.
Right, well, I'm getting the finger from the security guard here at the Etihad Stadium, so I think it's about time that we draw this to a close.
A beckoning finger, not like... He's not giving you, you know, the bird, is he?
I think I'm delirious. I'll do that bit again.
Can we not use that?
Sorry. Media steward. I was just making a joke out of it, basically. Yeah, okay.
30 seconds, sorry. Thanks for your patience.
I want chippy anyway.
Yeah. Enjoy your chippy.
Okay.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.